Stories of Journey to the West, Chapter 25.
Chapter 25 of Journey to the West.
What happens right after the tree is destroyed?
The immediate aftermath. So they, two young Taoist boys.
That's right. King Feng and Ming Yu.
They kind of recover from the initial shock and head back into the garden.
And what do they actually find there? Is it as bad as they feared?
Oh, it's bad. Tree fallen, branches broken, fruit and leaves gone. Just total destruction.
Hmm.
And the reaction is so physical, you know, since King Feng's legs just give out, he falls. Ming Yu feels numb. It's pure terror.
Primal fear.
Totally. And there's even that poem, right? It calls the fruit this herbal elixir.
Right. Wukong destroyed the elixir. And it ends saying, Ming Yu and King Feng were terrified.
Mm.
Really drives home how big a deal this is.
And makes you think, destroying something like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's more than just like property damage, isn't it, in their world?
Absolutely. It feels almost sacrilegious, like messing with something fundamental, which explains the sheer panic.
For sure. Which leads right to their next thought, the master.
Ah, yes. The classic, what are we going to tell the boss moment. When master returns home, how will the two of us explain?
They know they're in deep trouble and they don't waste any time figuring out who to blame.
Nope. Straight to Wukong. That description is pretty memorable, too.
Oh, yeah. Hairy-faced, thunder-moused fellow.
Doesn't exactly paint a flattering picture, does it? It suggests, you know, chaos follows him.
Definitely. But then they immediately realize, okay, confronting him. Bad idea.
Right. How could the two of us defeat the four of them? They're completely outnumbered. Smart enough to know that.
So direct confrontation is out. What's plan B?
Deception. So the plan is, go back. Pretend nothing's wrong.
Just say, we miscounted the fruit. Our bad.
Exactly. Oh. We just miscounted, despite the, you know, giant fallen tree in the garden.
It's pretty brazen, but they don't stop there, do they? It's not just a cover-up.
No, no, it escalates. They decide to lure the travelers into a trap.
Okay.
With food. They'll act all nice, offer them a meal, and then bam, slam the door shut, lock them in.
Umsha, climb and lock.
And not just one door. The text specifically says they lock multiple doors.
Oh.
Yay. They are serious about this.
Wow. Taking no chances. Why go to such lengths?
Well, they think Wukong's the thief, right? So their thinking is if they can catch the thief before the master gets back.
Hmm. Maybe they won't be in as much trouble themselves. Kind of shifting the blame preemptively.
Pretty much. Self-preservation kicks in hard.
Okay, so they've got this audacious plan. How does the execution go?
They go back to the travelers, and it's like a total personality switch. Super polite.
Apologizing for being rude earlier. Our words were crude. Don't blame us.
Yeah, total 30-80. But the travelers aren't completely fooled.
Right. Baji apparently makes some sarcastic comment about their earlier insults. He remembers.
He does. And crucially, Wukong. He knows.
He understands in his heart, but doesn't say anything.
He sees right through it. But for whatever reason, he decides to play along for now.
Which leads to the meal. And they even list the side dishes.
Yeah, pickled cucumbers, eggplant, radish, beans, the works. Woo, wook. It's such a mundane detail, isn't it?
It really is. It kind of makes the betrayal feel even sharper when it comes.
Totally. It grounds it. So they're eating, maybe starting to relax a little.
And that's when the attendants make their move.
Exactly. One boy on each side, ha, ha, slam, and the lock goes on, a big copper lock.
Just like that, mid-meal. Poor Baji is completely confused, right?
Yeah, he's like, why'd you lock the door while we're eating? Total bewilderment.
And then the niceties stop. The insults start flying.
Oh, yeah. The politeness evaporates. They turn on Baji, calling him a sup. Basically a greedy, food-stealing, bald thief.
The irony, blaming Baji when Wukong's right there, and they accuse him of the crime of unauthorized eating of garden fruits.
It's completely misdirected rage, and the threat they make is pretty intense, too.
What was it again? Something about rebirth.
Yeah, basically, if you ever hope to see the Buddha in the Western heaven, you'll have to be reborn as something lowly first, like a really nasty curse.
Yeah. Yikes. No wonder Tang Monk gets worried. Dropped his rice bowl and felt a stone in his heart.
Yeah, he knows this is serious trouble.
And the attendants don't just lock the one door, they go and secure all the gates.
Yep, front gate, second gate, making sure they're trapped, and they just keep yelling insults at them.
All the way until nightfall, just shouting abuse.
Apparently so.
Their fear and anger just boils over, and they're determined to keep them locked up tight.
But right now, Tang Monk is reading Sun Wukong the Riot Act.
Oh, absolutely. Tang Monk is, well, he's horrified.
Yeah.
Very concerned about proper conduct, the consequences.
He basically tells Wukong, look, stealing and then wrecking their magic tree, that's bad.
Really bad. He says something like, even if your dad was the emperor, you couldn't smooth this over if they complained. He's stressing the seriousness.
And Sun Wukong, is he immediately remorseful? Not quite.
No. His mind jumps straight to, how do we get out of here?
His plan is simple. Wait till the caretakers are asleep.
Yep. Let's just sneak out tonight, he says. Very impulsive.
But then comes Pigsy.
Good old Pigsy. Always practical.
He raises a rather obvious point, doesn't he?
He does. Monkey, how are we getting out? There are multiple doors and they're all locked. Seriously locked.
A very fair question.
And Sun Wukong. His response is pure confidence.
Door, don't worry.
Old Sun has his ways. You know, vague but very sure of himself.
Which naturally makes Pigsy suspicious.
Immediately. And he comes out with that great line.
Oh, the one about transformation. It's perfect.
Yeah, he said something like, oh, you'll be fine. You'll just turn into a fly or a worm or something.
Slip through a crack in the window.
And leave us poor guys who can't change shape stuck here holding the bag.
You can just picture him grumbling. It really shows that tension how Pigsy expects Wukong might just save himself.
It really does. Pigsy often voices that more self-serving practicality. He sees the potential downside for everyone else in Monkey's plans.
And Tang Monk picks up on this possibility too, right? That Wukong might actually ditch them.
He does, and he pulls out his ultimate trump card.
The old chant.
Which sounds mysterious, but as you know, it's not some forgotten scripture.
No, it's his secret weapon. The headache spell linked to that golden fillet on Sun Wukong's head.
His main tool for control. If Wukong steps out of line, zap. Agony.
And Pigsy's reaction to hearing old chant.
It's brilliant. Pure comedy. He's totally confused.
Starts listing actual Buddhist scriptures.
Right. Is it the Sharangama Sutra? The Diamond Sutra? Never heard of an old chant sutra? He completely misses the threat.
Shows where his mind is at, doesn't it? More earthly concerns.
Definitely. So Sun Wukong has to spell it out for him.
No. It's the tight fillet spell. The tight fillet sutra.
And crucially, he makes a promise.
Master, don't chant it. I won't abandon you. I promise we'll all get out together.
So, despite everything, that spell still holds power over him. He respects, or at least fears, Tang Monk's authority when push comes to shove.
Seems like it. He values his freedom, sure, but that pain is real.
And then right on cue.
Note falls.
The moon comes up. Perfect timing.
And Wukong says, okay, it's quiet. The moon's bright. This is it. Time to go.
But Pigsy's still stuck on the practicals.
Still worried about the locks. Seriously, Monkey, the doors are locked. How?
He needs a concrete answer, not just bravado. He doesn't want any tricks that leave him behind.
And this is where Sun Wukong finally shows his hand. Or rather, his staff.
Yeah, no clever transformations this time. It's more direct.
He pulls out the golden hooped staff.
And uses what the text calls an unlocking method. Which sounds technical, but
it's basically brute force with a fancy name.
Pretty much. He points the staff, there's a loud crash.
Several layers of door locks fell, and the doors swung open with a whoosh, just like that.
Effortless power display.
Pigsy is stunned.
Genuinely amazed, his comparison is great.
Saying even a blacksmith with, like, lock picks couldn't do it that smoothly.
Such a down-to-earth way to describe incredible magic. It really lands the effect.
And Sun Wukong, well, he laps it up.
Of course. He boasts, this door, nothing. I could pop open the southern gate of heaven just by pointing.
Total confidence. Maybe a little bit of arrogance there.
Just a touch. Way clear.
They're off. Tang Monk on the horse. Pigsy carrying the bags. Sandy leading the way. Westward ho.
But wait, Sun Wukong isn't quite done back at the temple.
Ah, right. He's got some loose ends to tie up.
You could say that. He wants to make sure those two young caretakers don't wake up and raise the alarm too soon.
He needs a head start. His plan.
Make them sleep for a month.
A month? Wow.
Yeah, just to be sure, delay any pursuit.
And Tang Monk immediately chimes in.
As always, the moral compass. Disciple, do not harm them.
He explicitly warns against committing another sin, like profiting by harming others.
Really highlights that fundamental difference between them, doesn't it? Wukong's focus is escape by any means. Tang Monk's is the right means.
Always the ethical considerations.
And so Wukong just says,
I understand, or I know.
Yeah, very brief. Does he really get it? or just mean he knows how not to physically harm them. It's a bit ambiguous.
And his method for this month-long nap is interesting.
Very. Not exactly conventional sedation.
He uses sleeping insects.
That's right. Little magical bugs he apparently won.
One from whom?
From one of the heavenly kings, Zengzeng, back at the Eastern Gate of Heaven.
Okay, so that's a callback to his previous adventures in the celestial realm.
Exactly. It shows his resourcefulness isn't just about brute strength or transformation. It's also about these odd tools and connections he's picked up along the way.
So he sneaks back, releases these bugs into the caretaker's room.
And poof, they're out cold.
Snoring soundly, the text says, no hope of waking up.
A quick, clean, in one sense solution? Ethically? Maybe less clean.
Definitely morally gray. Then he zips off, catches up with the others.
And they travel hard all night.
Nonstop, until dawn breaks.
And Teng Monk is, understandably, wiped out.
And he's not shy about blaming Sun Wukong.
Nope, this monkey. You've killed me. Because of your big mouth and your actions, I haven't slept a wink.
Fair point, maybe.
Sun Wukong's response is pretty dismissive, though.
Basically, stop complaining. It's morning. Let's rest here by the trees.
Yeah, get over it. Let's take a break.
Mm-hmm.
Not exactly dripping with empathy.
So they stop. Teng Monk rests against a tree.
Sandy dozes off near the luggage. Pigsy finds a nice flat rock for a pillow. Typical Pigsy.
And Sun Wukong. Does he rest?
Nah. He's got too much energy. The text says he's immediately, like, climbing trees and playing around.
Just restless. While everyone else is exhausted from the trouble he caused.
Shows his nature, doesn't it? Always active. Maybe a bit detached from the other's feelings at times.
So Zenyuan Mortal gets back. And at first, he's actually feeling pretty good about things.
Yeah. He sees the temple doors open. The courtyard looks neat. He even makes a comment like, oh, the boys have been unusually diligent. Sort of sets up this feeling of order.
But that doesn't last long. Things take a turn when they actually go inside the main hall. What's the situation there?
It's completely empty. No disciples, no incense burning, nothing.
Yeah.
Which immediately makes the other immortals traveling with Zenyuan suspicious.
What do they think happened?
Their first thought is maybe the kids took advantage of the master being away. You know, made off with something valuable.
But Zenyuan doesn't buy that, does he? Not at first.
No, he dismisses it straight away.
Yeah.
Says his disciples wouldn't do that. It shows maybe he trusts them. Or perhaps he's just not expecting trouble from within his own temple.
He thinks they just, what, forgot to close their door and overslept.
Pretty much. He assumes innocence initially, which is interesting, given what happens next.
So that explanation kind of falls apart when they actually get to the disciples' room. What do they find there?
Well, the door's shut, but they can hear loud snoring. Really loud. But no matter how much they knock or shout.
Nothing. They don't wake up?
Not a peep. It's like they're completely out cold, almost like... magically asleep.
So not just tired then. This suggests something else is going on, something maybe supernatural.
Definitely points that way. Being that unresponsive isn't normal.
Hmm.
So the other immortals, they basically have to break down the door.
They force it open.
Yeah, and then they have to physically drag King Feng and Ming Yu out of their beds. And they're still dead asleep.
Wow. Okay. And Zenyuan Immortal, how's he reacting to all this? Is he angry yet?
Not really angry. More. Perplexed. He actually wonders aloud if someone played a trick on them, put them under some kind of spell.
So curiosity before anger, that tells you something about him, maybe. A bit more level-headed.
It suggests he wants to understand before he, you know, lays down the law. He considers magic first, not just blaming his disciples outright.
Which leads him to use his own magic to wake them up.
Exactly. He splashes some water on them and uses a special incantation to break whatever spell is holding them.
And boom, they finally wake up and their reaction is... not gone.
Not at all. They snap awake, totally disoriented, and then they see their master and all these other immortals staring at them. They look terrified.
Understandable, I guess. And what's the first thing they do?
Their immediate instinct is to point the finger. Not demons, not random spirits.
But Teng San Zhang and his crew, they label them robbers, call them very fierce.
And it immediately paints the pilgrims as the villains in this whole mess,
mm-hmm.
at least from the disciples' perspective. It sets the conflict in motion.
But Zenyuan Mortal, he stays calm through this.
Remarkably so. He just asks them to, you know, calm down and explain slowly. Quite restrained, considering his power.
Okay, so King Feng starts telling the story. This happened right after Zenyuan left.
Yeah, he explains that Teng San Zhang and his disciples, four of them, plus the horse, arrived shortly after the master departed.
Good to get the head count right. Establishes who was there.
Right. And King Feng says they did exactly what Zenyuan told them to do. They offered Teng San Zhang two ginseng fruits.
so he refuses to eat them.
King Feng and Ming Yu decide to eat one each themselves.
Enter Sun Wukong.
Ah, yes, the Monkey King. Sneaks in and helps himself. Not to one.
But four of them. They find out.
Ugh. They confront him.
The disciples said he used supernatural means.
Yeah, they described him getting really angry.
So much that they're actually crying while telling Zen Yuan this story.
Yeah, they're genuinely distressed. And one of the other immortals asks a pretty logical question at this point.
Did the monks hit you? Makes sense to ask that, right? If they're crying and talking about a confrontation.
It's the natural assumption, physical harm. But Min Yu shakes her head. No, they weren't hit.
So what did Wukong do that was so bad?
This is the big reveal. Min Yu says he didn't hurt us, but he knocked down our ginseng tree.
Whoa. Not just stole fruit, but destroyed the source, the actual tree. That's huge.
Exactly. It escalates things massively. This isn't just petty theft anymore. It's destruction of an incredibly rare, ancient, magical treasure. This is where Zen Yuan's reaction really shifts.
But still, surprisingly, not immediate rage. He seems almost aware.
Yeah, it's interesting. He doesn't fly off the handle. Instead, he actually identifies Sun Wukong. He says something like, "Aye, that must be Sun Wukong, that Tai Lu's immortal."
He knows who he is. Knows about his reputation, causing trouble up in heaven.
Seems like it. He recognizes the name and the power level. A Tai Lusa mortal. Basically, a powerful, free agent immortal. Not part of the main celestial hierarchy. Often means unpredictable.
So his reaction isn't just calm, it's informed calm. He knows this monkey is capable of serious trouble.
Precisely. It suggests he understands the scale of the problem now. It's not just some random travelers. It's Sun Wukong.
Okay, so he knows who did it. Then he asks the key question. Can the disciples actually point them out, identify them?
And King Feng says, absolutely. Yes, we can recognize them.
So despite the initial calm assessment, Zen Yuan is definitely not letting this slide. What are his orders?
He tells the disciples, go prepare the punishments. And crucially, he says he will personally go and capture them.
Okay, so the immortal himself is getting involved now? This is serious.
Very serious. It shows he views this as a major offense that requires his direct intervention.
And they set off pretty quickly, right? Using those auspicious clouds for travel.
Super fast. The clouds let them cover huge distances almost instantly. Really highlights the difference between immortal travel and, well, walking or riding a horse.
They head west first, assuming the pilgrims kept going that way.
Seems the logical assumption, yeah. So, following the direction of their journey. But they don't find them.
So they turn back east, and they overshoot them by a lot.
By over 900 miles. It really drives home how fast the immortals are moving compared to the pilgrims.
Especially when you find out Tang Sanzang's group only managed about 120 miles overnight on horseback. That's a huge speed difference.
A massive gulf. Shows even immortals can misjudge mortal pace sometimes. But they do eventually spot them.
How? Who sees them?
It's actually one of the immortal children with Zen Yuan who points them out. Said something like, look, isn't that them resting under that tree by the road?
And Zen Yuan confirms it is. So what are his instructions now? Does he swoop down immediately?
No. He tells King Feng, okay, you head back to the temple now. Get ropes ready. Presumably to tie them up.
And Zen Yuan himself will handle the actual capture.
Yep. He says he'll apprehend them himself. So King Feng immediately turns his cloud around and heads back to the temple as ordered. So picture this. Zen Yuan Daxian.
But interestingly, he doesn't just like storm after them breathing fire.
No.
No, he adopts a rather clever disguise first.
Oh, okay. This is a brilliant bit of storytelling. He magically transforms himself. Into what?
Into a wandering Taoist priest. And the details in the text really paint a picture.
Okay, like what?
Well, he's wearing a resak, which is like a patched robe, suggesting a simple, wandering life.
Okay, humble.
Right. And a luho, a lugong sash. He carries a duster and a fish drum. You could almost hear it, like, tapping gently.
Adding to the whole unassuming image.
Totally. It's a really carefully constructed disguise, designed to lower their guard, you know?
What else?
He's got Eku, Tangyin, these three-eared straw sandals, and a nine-yang headscarf. It completes the look of this humble traveler.
And then there's this detail about him singing.
Yeah. As he approaches, the text says he's singing Moon High. It adds this almost ethereal quality to his approach. Kind of spooky, actually.
So this figure, this disguised immortal, encounters Tang Monk, who's just resting by the roadside.
Right. And Zenyuan Daxian engages him, very politely at first, just asking about their travels, where they're from.
And Tang Monk being, you know, always courteous.
Always.
He tells him about their journey, coming from the Tang Dynasty, heading west to get the scriptures.
Zenyuan Daxian then asks, kind of casually, if they've passed through any interesting mountains or places lately.
Uh-huh. Trying to lead him on.
Exactly. And Tang Monk, still completely unaware, asks the name of this place, this immortal palace there near.
And Zenyuan reveals it.
Wizhuang Temple on Longevity Mountain. Bam.
Now, Sun Wukong, monkey.
Oh.
He's there too, right?
Oh, yeah.
And whether it's guilt or just his usual, you know, quick thinking.
Yeah.
Maybe too quick.
He immediately jumps in with this just totally unbelievable denial. Claims they haven't been anywhere near it, stuck strictly to the main road.
Classic Wukong, maybe, but yeah, probably not his best lie.
Not at all. And Zenyuan Daxian, who clearly knows way more, just cuts right through it.
What does he say?
He basically says, look, don't play games with me. I know it was you lot who messed up my ginseng tree. There's no point running. Just give it back. Direct accusation.
Okay. And how does the famously quick-tempered Monkey King respond to that?
Huh. True to form. Instant fury. No more denial, no trying to talk his way out, just pure action.
He attacks.
Immediately pulls out his iron staff and goes right for Zenyuan Daxian.
Wow. But Zenyuan Daxian, as we're learning, is...
Oh!
He's on another level.
Oh, completely. He just evades the blow, like, effortlessly, and ascends into the sky, glowing with this auspicious light.
And Wukong, never one to back down.
Naturally follows him straight up, ready for a fight in the air.
Okay, so then comes the big reveal, right? Zenyuan Daxian drops the disguise.
He does. Sheds the humble priest look and appears in his true immortal form right there in midair. And the contrast is just striking.
Tell us about it. What does he look like now?
Okay, so now he's wearing a purple gold crown. Very regal.
Zigazvise's status.
Definitely. And a pearl, which is described as a carefree crane cloak. Again, emphasizing his immortal nature. Silk sash at his waist.
And his appearance.
He looks youthful, but carries this air of like, profound authority, handsome face, three elegant whiskers, and remarkably, his only weapon.
What is it?
A jade duster, a chin. That's it. Suggests someone who doesn't really need brute force, you know?
That's fascinating. Meanwhile, Sun Wukong is probably going wild with his staff.
Oh, yeah, unleashing this whirlwind of attacks. It's described as more raw power than refined technique at this point.
But Zenyuan Daxian.
With what seems like just effortless grace, he deflects every single blow, just using that jade duster.
Wow, it really highlights the difference, doesn't it? Wukong's impulsive strength versus the immortal's, like, disciplined power.
Precisely. And after this brief but pretty intense exchange, Zenyuan Daxian decides it's time to use his really big move.
Okay, what's that?
His formidable technique, the mastery. Sleeve universe.
Sleeve universe? What does that even mean?
It basically suggests mastery over space itself, containing the universe within his sleeve.
Whoa. Okay, this is a truly captivating moment in the story. What happens?
He just unfurls his sleeve, that's it. And in an instant,
yeah,
all four monks, Tang Monk, Wukong Baji, and She Monk and their horse, they're just swept up, contained, inside his seemingly ordinary sleeve.
Just like that. Gone. Yeah.
Gone. It speaks volumes about the sheer gulf in their power level.
Incredible. It's a display of magic that really underscores how extraordinary Zenyuan Daxian is.
Absolutely. And there's even a touch of humor mixed in.
Oh, yeah. With Pigsy.
Of course. Zhu Baji, ever practical and maybe a little slow on the uptake.
Yeah.
He mistakes being trapped in the sleeve for being stuffed into Chiva like giant trousers or something.
Seriously, trousers?
Yeah, Sun Wukong has to quickly correct him, like, no, idiot, this is magic, clarifying their truly weird predicament.
Oh, Baji. And of course, leave it to him to try the direct approach, right?
You guessed it. He starts digging at the inside of the sleeve with his rake.
Like he could just make a hole and climb out.
Pretty much. Probably thought the immortal just, you know, hadn't closed his sleeve properly or something.
I'm guessing that doesn't work.
Not a chance. He discovers pretty quickly that the sleeve, even though it looks soft, has this incredible resilience. It's way stronger than any wall.
Right. Really emphasizes they're dealing with forces beyond their usual punch it till it breaks experience.
Exactly. So they're completely contained. Helpless, really.
And Zenyuan Daxian just carries them back to his temple.
Yep. Returns to Wuswang Temple, takes a seat in the main hall, and then almost casually he just releases them from the sleeve.
How is it described?
The text says, Zha, like taking out puppets.
Oof. That really underscores how easily he subdued them.
Totally. And then they're tied up. Tang Monk is tied to a pillar right there in the main hall.
And the disciples?
His three disciples, Wukong, Baji, Sha Monk, they're each tied to separate pillars. Even their horse gets tied up in the courtyard, given some fodder.
And their luggage.
Just placed neatly on the porch. It all has this sense of, like, calm, effortless control. He's completely in charge.
Interestingly, though, despite being clearly angry about his tree and his fruit.
Yeah.
Then Wujaxian tells his disciples not to harm the monks with weapons. He respects their religious status.
That is interesting. A bit of restraint there. But he's still determined to punish them, right, for the theft and the damage.
Oh, yeah. This sets a more serious tone. He orders his disciples to fetch a leather whip.
So physical punishment is definitely on the table.
For sure. Intending to punish them for what they did to a sacred fruit.
And knowing these stories, this probably isn't just any old whip.
You got it. It's described as a 7-star whip made from dragon skin.
Dragon skin. Okay, that sounds serious.
And it's been soaking in water, presumably to make it sting even more. One of the stronger disciples is told to get ready to use it.
Okay, so the tension's really ramping up. Who's first in line for this?
Zinyuan Daxian declares that Tang Monk, as the leader, the master.
The one responsible for his disciples' behavior.
Exactly. He'll be punished first for their disrespect.
Ouch. Tang Monk isn't exactly built for that kind of thing.
Right. And Sun Wukong surprisingly seemed to realize this, despite being the one who actually caused all the trouble. He feels this surge of protectiveness for his master. He knows Tang Monk is, well, physically frail. He couldn't take a beating like that.
So what does Wukong do? This is a really pivotal moment, isn't it?
It really is. He steps forward, takes full responsibility.
Wow.
Says, it was me. I stole the fruit. I ate the fruit. I knocked down the tree. Punish me.
That's actually huge for Wukong, an act of genuine self-sacrifice, putting himself in the line of fire.
Yeah. Zinyuan Daxian is clearly surprised by this.
Okay.
It's unexpected courage from the monkey.
I bet he was. Does he agree?
He does. Agrees to punish Sun Wukong first. He orders 30 lashes.
30? Why 30?
To match the number of ginseng fruits that were stolen. A specific number.
Okay, so Wukong's about to get whipped with a dragon skin whip, but this is Wukong we're talking about.
Exactly. And here we see his characteristic resourcefulness, or maybe cheating, depending on how you look at it.
What does he do?
He secretly uses his magic to transform his legs into 2 legs of solid wrought iron.
Ha. Huh. Of course he does. To withstand the beating without actually getting hurt. Clever and resilient.
So the disciple lays into him, delivers the 30 lashes. By the time it's done, it's almost noon.
But Zinyuan Daxian isn't finished, is he?
Nope. Not satisfied. He then orders Tang Monk to be punished anyway.
For what reason this time?
For failing to supervise his disciples properly.
Mm.
For their negligence.
Ah, okay, so master's responsibility again.
Right. But once again, Sun Wukong jumps in.
Again?
Yeah. Further showing this, like, newfound sense of responsibility, he insists his master knew nothing about it, that it was all their fault, and he offers to take the punishment for Tang Monk's supposed negligence, too.
Wow. Doing it twice really underscores a change in him, doesn't it? It's not just impulsive protection anymore.
It seems like it. And Zinyuan Daxian actually acknowledges this. He comments on Wukong's unexpected filial piety, you know, loyalty to his master.
So he agrees again to whip Wukong instead of Tang Monk.
Yes. So Wukong gets another 30 lashes.
Another 30.
Yeah.
And presumably his iron legs hold up.
They do. The description afterward is quite telling. Wukong checks his legs and they appear, basically, as bright as mirrors, all polished up from the beating.
But he feels no pain.
No pain at all. Really emphasizes how effective his magic was and how determined he was to protect his master.
So that's 60 lashes in total for Wukong, even if he didn't feel them. What happens next?
Well, the day's ending.
Mm-hmm.
And Zinyuan Daxian, still not quite finished with them, orders the whip to be soaked in water overnight.
Preparing for more punishment the next day.
Seems like it. More interrogation, more beatings threatened for the morning. The disciples then have their evening meal. They go off to bed.
Leaving our heroes tied up and in a really precarious spot. Wow.
Yeah. And the Tang Monk is, shall we say, not handling it well.
Bless his heart, no. He's complaining and he's pretty much laying all the blame squarely on his disciples.
It's fascinating how he's consistently shown like this, isn't it? You might expect, you know, a holy man to be this pillar of strength.
You're right. Unwavering.
Yeah, but he often shows this very human vulnerability. And like you said, that tendency to point fingers when things go wrong.
Makes you wonder about the ideal of the quest versus the well, flawed reality of the people actually doing it.
Definitely. And then there's Sun Wukong's reaction, which is just pure Wukong.
Oh, absolutely classic. He basically dismisses the Tang monk's whining, almost scoffs at the idea that these ropes could possibly hold him, which is such a Wukong thing to do.
That's boastfulness.
Yeah.
It's almost arrogance, right? It's such a key part of his character.
But does it usually come before he pulls off something amazing?
Often, yes. It makes you wonder, is it just bravado? Or is it like genuine confidence based on everything he's done before, you know,
yeah,
wrecking the heavenly palace and all that?
Good point. And yeah, then you get Zhu Baji piping up.
Baji. Always ready with a comment.
Ever the comic relief, yeah. He makes this sarcastic crack about Wukong's history of escaping tight spots, basically saying, oh, these little ropes, this is nothing compared to the messes you usually get us into,
yeah,
and out of.
Baji's sarcasm, it does lighten the mood, but it also kind of reminds us, doesn't it? Reminds us of their shared history.
Mm-hmm. They've been through a lot together, often because of Wukong.
Right. And there's this sort of shared understanding. Wukong gets them into trouble. Wukong gets them out. It adds this layer of, well, maybe grudging camaraderie.
Exactly. And Wukong naturally doubles down. He insists he can escape anything.
Famous last words. Or...
or maybe just an accurate prediction, knowing him.
Well, with Wukong, you never quite know, but often the boast turns out to be true. And here's where it gets clever.
Okay, the escape itself.
Right. Under the cover of night, he uses his shape-shifting powers, shrinks himself down, tiny.
Like really small.
Almost imperceptible, the text suggests. Small enough to just slip right out of those supposedly inescapable ropes.
Wow. Talk about thinking outside the box. Or shrinking inside the ropes, I guess.
Yeah.
Unties the Tang monk, Zhu Baji, and Sha monk, too. But the escape isn't just untying knots. There's more. He comes up with this pretty ingenious plan involving willow trees.
Yes, the decoys. He tells Zhu Baji to uproot 4 willow trees.
And Baji actually does it. Usually he avoids work like the plague.
Well, in a moment of, let's say, uncharacteristic effort, Baji manages it.
Huh. Shows how serious things must have felt.
Right. It underlines the urgency. Maybe it's loyalty. Maybe it's just fear of getting caught again. But something motivates him beyond his usual, you know, laziness and hunger.
Precisely. So Baji gets the trees. And then Sun Wukong works his magic.
He breaks off branches, gets everyone back inside, reties the original ropes to the pillars.
Gotta maintain the illusion.
Exactly. And then, this is the dramatic part, he spits his own blood onto the willow trees.
Whoa, hang on. His blood.
His own blood.
Huh.
While reciting a magic spell.
Okay, that adds a whole other layer. Why blood?
Well, in many traditions, right, blood carries power, essence, life force.
So it's not just a simple trick.
Exactly. It suggests this illusion is potent. It requires a part of Wukong himself, which really emphasizes how dire their situation is and, you know, the lengths he's willing to go to.
Yeah, that should work.
Oh, it works perfectly. The willow trees transform into these uncanny replicas of the 4 travelers.
Yeah, they look like them.
They look like them. They sound like them. They even respond if you call their names.
No way. It's a full-on magical decoy operation.
It really showcases Wukong's mastery, doesn't it?
So with their leafy doubles convincingly tied up.
They make a run for it.
Mm.
Under the cover of darkness, they don't dare stick around.
Can't blame them. They know the trick won't last forever.
Right. They understand that facing Zenyu and Daxian's wrath again.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's not something they want to do. They're just buying time. It's a temporary fix.
Which, naturally, leads us to the next morning.
And a rather amusing scene unfolds.
Hey. Zenyu and Daxian, the immortal master of the temple, he's ready to dish out some punishment. He tells his young Taoist disciples to fetch the whips.
And there's this wonderful irony here. This incredibly powerful immortal.
Yeah.
He has absolutely no idea he's about to be, well, tricked, made a fool of. It just shows how even the most powerful can be caught off guard by cleverness.
So the boys get the wicks?
And the slapstick begins.
Yeah.
They start whipping the willow tree decoys. And the trees yell back. They actually cry out in pain.
You're kidding.
Nope. The Tang monk willow apparently cries, ouch. The Zhu Baji willow shouts, hey.
But then miles away, something weird happens to Sun Wukong.
Don't tell me he felt the whipping.
Sort of. He feels this sudden shiver, this like weird sensation, and he immediately realizes, ugh, they're beating my transformed willows.
There's the connection between him and the trees.
Apparently. Through the magic, maybe the blood he used, he tells the Tang monk what's happening, that there's this sympathetic link.
Wild. So what does he do?
He quickly cancels the magic, dispels the transformation from afar.
And back at the temple. You can just imagine the boys' faces. Utter confusion.
That is hilarious. A bit of light relief before things get serious again. So the poor kids are totally baffled. They run back to Zenyu and Daxian,
reporting that they've just been flogging the roots of some willow trees. Not monks.
How does Zenyu and Daxian take this news? Is he furious?
Well, his first reaction is quite interesting. He doesn't immediately fly off the handle.
No.
No, he lets out this sort of cold laugh. He recognizes the style. He knows it's Sun Wukong's mischief.
He knows his reputation.
Oh, yeah. He even mentions Wukong history, causing havoc in the Heavenly Palace. He knows this monkey has a track record for audacious stunts.
So it's almost like grudging respect mixed with annoyance.
I think that's a good way to put it. He maybe recognizes the skill, the sheer nerve of the trick, sees a bit of a kindred spirit in causing chaos, maybe?
Except this time, the chaos is directed at him.
Precisely. And while he might appreciate the cleverness on some level, his authority, his pride, they've been directly challenged.
Escaping is one thing, but replacing themselves with trees.
It's a direct insult, an affront that he simply cannot let stand. It has to be punished.
No doubt about it. So Zenyu and Daxian doesn't waste any time. He immediately gives chase.
Mounts his cloud, off he goes.
And it doesn't take him long at all to spot the four travelers trying to make their getaway.
And this quick pursuit, it just underscores how powerful Zenyu and Daxian really is, his reach.
Yeah, escaping him by just trickery. Probably not a long-term solution.
It really speaks to the limits of just being clever when you're up against overwhelming power, doesn't it?
For sure. So he descends, his voice booming out, demanding they return his ginseng fruit tree.
Ah, the tree. Let's not forget that's what started this whole mess.
The original sin, so to speak.
And that tree, it serves as this really potent symbol, doesn't it, of temptation and consequence.
Their inability to resist led them straight here.
Makes you think about desire and how seemingly small actions can have these huge unforeseen results.
And Zubaji, seeing Zenyu and Daxian coming for them, how does he react?
Oh, classic Baji. Basically an, oh dear Lord, here we go again moment. Pure panic.
Bless his cowardly heart.
But his fear, his complaining, it provides that sort of relatable human touch amidst all the magic and gods, you know.
Yeah.
He often says what the others might be feeling but are too proud or focused to admit.
True. But Sun Wukong, his reaction is, as always, the complete opposite.
Let me guess. Fight.
Exactly. He turns to the Ting Monk and basically says, Master, look, just for once, forget the compassion. Let's just beat this guy senseless and get on with our journey.
Which is a rather un-monk-like suggestion.
Just a bit.
And it starkly contrasts their whole approaches, right?
Mm-hmm.
The Tang Monk's commitment to non-violence versus Wukong's very pragmatic, often violent way of solving problems.
Yeah. It's that core tension that runs through the whole story.
It really is. So how does the Tang Monk respond to this suggestion of violence?
Unsurprisingly, he's utterly terrified, says nothing, just frozen.
So the disciples take matters into their own hands.
Yep. Sha Monk raises his staff, Zubaji gets his rake ready, and Sun Wukong lifts his famous iron cudgel.
They square up to him.
They surround Zenyu and Daxian right there in midair,
Yeah. Weapons
ready. It looks like a serious fight is about to break out.
And that image, these three powerful, flawed but powerful figures, facing off against an even more powerful immortal, it sets the stage for something big.
Despite all their issues, they unite when faced with a common enemy.
Shows that degree of loyalty, maybe interdependence, even if it's forced by circumstance.
And this is where the tension really hits its peak. Our source, the chapter, includes a poem at this point.
The battle poems in Journey to the West are always significant.
This one really encapsulates the clash that's about to happen. It paints a vivid picture of the power dynamics. It mentions Zenyu and Daxian having three divine weapons.
Three divine weapons. Against their three.
Against Sun Wukong's staff, Zubaji's rake, and Sha Monk's staff.
Okay, so the poem immediately establishes Zenyu and Daxian as seriously formidable, even against three opponents.
Right. And get this, it also says he defends himself with just a horsetail whisk initially.
Just a whisk? That suggests almost effortless superiority, like he's barely trying at first.
Exactly. The poem strongly implies this isn't going to be some quick brawl. It hints at a long, difficult fight.
It foreshadows the struggle.
Yeah, the final lines really hit home how serious this is. They basically question if the pilgrims can ever reach the West if they struggle this much against just one immortal.
So the poem isn't just describing the fight, it's raising the stakes for the entire journey.
Totally. It suggests the path ahead is going to be filled with enemies of incredible power. Beings who require more than just Wukong's tricks or brute force to overcome.
It really makes you ask, what else will they need? What other resources, inner or outer, will they have to find to actually succeed? And Zenyuan Daxian basically catches them again. Right, like immediately.
Yeah, almost instantly. He catches all four travelers, the monk, the disciples, even the horse and the luggage. Swift.
How does he do it this time? I remember the first time was impressive.
Well, get this. He uses his fly whisk, you know, that Taoist whisk, and then his sleeve?
His sleeve. Seriously.
Right.
Like he just scoops them all up in his sleeve.
That's exactly how the text describes it. Bundles them all up, monk, disciples, horse, everything into his sleeve, and just whoosh, transports them back to the temple. It emphasizes how effortless it seems for him.
Wow. Okay, so they're back at the temple, captured again. What happens then? How do they get out of the sleeve?
Just as easily as they went in, apparently. He takes them out, and then they're tied up. Tang Monk gets tied to a locust tree, a short one.
And the others.
Pigsy and Sandy are tied to trees on either side of him. And Sun Wukong, Monkey, he's just bound up and left on the ground.
And knowing Monkey, he probably has something to say about this.
Oh, absolutely. Classic Monkey. He just sort of casually remarks something like, oh, I guess we're going to be questioned now. Like, it's no big deal.
Chuckles slightly. Yeah, that sounds like him. Completely unfazed. Or pretending to be.
Right. But things are about to get much more serious than just questioning. Zenyuan Daxian orders 10 bolts of long cloth.
10 bolts? What for?
Well, Monkey, of course, has a theory. He sarcastically suggests maybe it's for making medium sleeves, or maybe just, you know, a single mouthful of cloth. Always cracking jokes.
Even tied up on the ground. But that's not the real reason, is it?
No, not at all. The real plan is much darker. They're going to use this homewoven cloth to wrap up Tang Monk, Pigsy, and Sandy completely. Like mummies. And Monkey, with his grim sense of humor, pipes up that it looks like they're preparing them for a big coffin.
Yikes. That's, yeah, grim is the word. But wait, it gets worse, doesn't it?
It does. After they're wrapped, Zenyuan Daxian orders lacquer, raw and ripe lacquer. They collected themselves to be smeared all over the cloth.
Lacquer. They're going to lacquer them.
Yep. Thankfully, they leave their heads and faces uncovered. A small mercy, I suppose.
I guess so. And Pigsy.
Pigsy, being Pigsy, apparently worries about the practicalities. Asks if they'll leave holes at the bottom for, well, for excrement, as the text puts it.
Oh, Pigsy. Even in mortal danger.
Hmm.
But okay, lacquered monks, what next? This can't be good.
It isn't. Next, they bring out a huge pot. A cauldron, basically.
Okay, now I'm really worried.
Monkey tries to stay optimistic, or maybe just sarcastic again. Jokes that maybe it's for cooking them a meal. Pigsy just kind of resigns himself, saying at least he'll be a full ghost.
Oh, man. But it's not for food, is it?
No. Zenyuan Daxian orders firewood piled up, a huge fire lit. And then he orders a pot of clear oil to be heated until it's boiling. Rolling, the text says.
Boiling oil? Oh, no.
And the order is specific. Throw Sun Wukong in first. Fry him once, he says, as revenge for the ginseng fruit tree.
Fry Monkey. Wow. Okay. That's intense. How does Monkey react to that?
This is the amazing part. He overhears this, and the text says he's secretly delighted. He's actually happy about it.
Happy? About being thrown in boiling oil. Why?
His reasoning is just peak Monkey. He thinks, hey, I haven't had a bath in ages. My skin's all dry and itchy. A dip in boiling oil sounds perfect.
Laughs incredulously. No way. That's insane. Is he serious?
It's hard to tell if it's pure bravado or genuinely strange logic, right? But that's what he thinks. A nice hot oil bath.
Unbelievable. But even he must have some self-preservation instinct. Is he actually going to let them throw him in?
Well, he does have a moment of caution. He worries that the immortal's magic might be too strong, that maybe he can't counter it inside the pot. So he quickly looks around.
Planning something.
Always planning something. He spots a sundial to the east and, crucially, a stone lion to the west.
Okay. A stone lion.
Yep. So quick as a flash, he rolls over towards the west, bites his tongue hard enough to draw blood, spits the blood onto the stone lion, and shouts, transform, and bam! The stone lion instantly turns into a perfect copy of Sun Wukong, tied up exactly as he was.
Whoa. So he swapped himself out.
Pretty much. His real self, his spirit, leaves his body, flies up into the clouds, and just watches the whole scene unfold from above.
That's incredibly clever. Okay, so the Taoists don't know they're about to try and fry a rock.
Exactly. A little immortal reports the oil is boiling hot. Zenyu and Daxing says, "Okay, bring the monkey."
And they try to lift
Yeah,
the stone monkey.
they do. Four young Taoists try. Can't budge it. They get four more. Still nothing. Even with 12 of them, this monkey is stuck fast.
Feels that bad.
Yeah, the others are commenting, like, "Wow, this monkey's heavier than he looks. He's really solid, clings to the earth." It's kind of comical, actually.
So how do they finally get it in the pot?
They eventually need 20 of the small immortals to heave this stone lion replica up and toss it into the boiling oil.
And what happens then? Please tell me it makes a huge mess.
Oh, it does. There's a loud clang over cois as the stone hits the metal pot. Scalding hot oil splashes everywhere, burns the faces of the poor Taoists nearby, gives them blisters.
Ouch. Serves them right, maybe.
Well, yeah, and then it gets worse for them. The kid tending the fire yells out that the pot is leaking.
He broke the pot.
Smashed it, all the expensive oil drains out, and there at the bottom, amidst the broken pot shards, is just a stone lion.
Oh, brilliant. I
Wow!
totally fooled them. How does Zenyu and Daxian take this?
He is furious, absolutely enraged, calls Monkey impudent, realizes he's been completely played.
Yeah, I imagine he would be.
He complains that trying to deal with Monkey is like, trying to grab sand or catch the wind. It's impossible. You can just feel his frustration.
So does he give up on Monkey then?
For the moment, yes. He basically says, "Fine, let him go. Who, like, it's not worth the effort right now." But
But there's always a but, isn't there?
he's still determined to get revenge for his tree, so he immediately turns his attention back to the others.
Oh no. Who's the target now?
The main man himself, Tang Monk. Zenyu and Daxian orders him to be unbound from the tree
Okay, maybe he's letting them go.
and tells his followers to get a new pot ready to fry the Tang Monk instead. Fry him to avenge the tree.
What? No, he wouldn't.
Seems like he would. The little immortals start untying Tang Monk, unwrapping the cloth. The danger just shifted massively.
But Monkey's watching from the clouds, right? He must hear this.
He does. He hears the plan to fry his master, and he knows Tang Monk has absolutely zero defense against boiling oil. He's just a normal human monk.
So he has to do something.
And he does. Immediately, he swoops down from the sky, bold as ever, lands there and shouts, "Hey, don't damage those wrappings. I'll go in the pot myself."
Wow. Just like that. What a re-entrance.
Totally. Zenyu and Daxian is understandably shocked and even angrier now. "You? How did you sabotage my stove?" he demands.
And Monkey's answer, I bet it's cheeky.
You bet correctly. Pure cheek. He basically blames Zenyu and Daxian, saying, "Well, you shouldn't have messed with me." Then he claims he was actually looking forward to the oil soup. This.
Oh, come on.
But, he really needed to use the restroom first, wouldn't want to pollute the nice clean oil before his bath.
The audacity, he actually says that.
Yep. And then he sarcastically offers himself up again. "Go on, fry me instead of my master."
Incredible. Just incredible
Yeah.
nerve. And how does the immortal react to that?
The text says Zenyu and Daxian gives a cold laugh, not amused. And as Monkey steps out from a hall, the immortal reaches out and grabs him.
Grabs him. So Monkey's caught again, right after his big heroic return.
Seems like it.
Thank you.